Summer in Sodom. Chapter 13. Ted awoke and looked at his watch. It was past noon. A glance through the window told him the day was damp and dull. The foghorn moaned into the early afternoon. The sound was a trigger for his memory. He felt the sharp jab of the pit of his stomach as he remembered Scars and Ian. He felt momentarily weak at the realization that before the night was over, he would be forced to sign away everything that he owned. Hope glimmered briefly at the thought of Jerry, but then it died. He appreciated Jerry's offer to help, but he was sure that Jerry could do nothing. There was no solution to the blackmail. If he didn't pay in money, he would pay many times over, year after year, as the threat followed him through the rest of his life. He was trapped. He resisted the impulse to spend the dreary day in bed. Lethargically, he massaged the tetanus from the long muscles of his thighs, forcing himself into the relaxation that comes with resignation. He shifted about beneath the covers and felt the coldness of the sheets beneath the knotted muscles of his back and buttocks. He felt the morning pressure of sex rise within him, and he fought back the feeling with disgust. He seemed to be trapped in a web of sex. Quickly, he got up, rubbing the sleep from his eyes. He grabbed his bathrobe and headed for the shower down the hall. He stood under the stinging spray and lathered the suds into the hardened planes of his body. Finally, he shut off the hot water and cringed beneath the shock of the ice-cold deluge. He let his breath out slowly, relaxing his swollen muscles and shut off the spray. He stood shivering, the water dripping upon the tiles from the shining wetness of his nude flesh. He grabbed for the towel, ruffled it through his tawny hair, over the rounded firmness of his shoulders, and tobogganed the rough terry cloth down the rugged columns of his legs. He punished his rugged body brutally until his skin was alive and glowing with masculine beauty and good health. He went back to his room and pulled on a pair of briefs. During the past few days, his skin had acquired a ruddy brownness. The body that was reflected in the oval mirror was the picture of masculine perfection, a body cast in the poetical imagery of Byron or the bronze sculpture of Rodin. Only the dark shadows beneath the brown eyes told a story of strain. He ran a comb through the unruly curls of his wiry hair and slipped into his tight cotton slacks. He pulled a sport shirt out of the drawer, pushed his long arms into it, and with a frown at the chilly day, pulled out a wool cardigan. He ran down the stairs and was thankful that he met no one. He went outside, crossed the road, and with hands plunged deep in the pockets of his trousers, he set off on an aimless walk along the beach. As he neared town, his steps turned away from the beach. Before he knew himself where he was going, he found himself standing in the shiny wet street in front of the rooming house where Jerry had taken him the previous evening. He stared up at the cold, black windows. A fierce inner struggle raged within him. He wanted to go to the door, ask for Jerry, feel Jerry's warmth and confidence dispel the terror which mounted in him as the day advanced toward darkness. But somehow he knew that he couldn't see Jerry again. That it wouldn't be right to take from Jerry until he was sure he could give the one thing Jerry wanted, and be sure that he meant it. More depressed than ever, he returned to the beach and walked along the sodden brown sand toward the Gables. Eileen was on the front porch playing solitaire when he walked in.
"I've been looking for you," she said, smiling. "It's such a rotten day. Let's have a game of cribbage."
Ted buried the impulse to refuse. At least it was something to do to make the time pass. She beat him 3 times in a row. His mind refused to concentrate, and he gave away the cards. All the while, he was aware of her eyes studying him. He rejected the intimate atmosphere she was trying so hard to establish. Her coy attempts to project awareness of her womanhood into his mind only annoyed him. Finally, he stood up. He realized that he hadn't eaten all day, and his stomach was rebelling. "I'm going to make myself a sandwich," he said.
"I'll join you. How about a cup of tea?"
Ted shook his head. "I'm going to have one of Ian's beers," he said with unnecessary malice. He didn't wait for her to gather up the cards and put away the cribbage board. He went into the kitchen and opened a can of beer. As he was taking a long sip, he heard the phone ring. Eileen picked up the receiver in the hall.
"Ted, it's for you," she called.
His heart rose. Perhaps it was Jerry. He hurried into the hall carrying his beer can. But one look at her face told him the caller was not Jerry.
"It's Ian," she said distastefully.
She handed the receiver to him and then lingered as he said hello. When Ted looked at her pointedly, she frowned and went into the kitchen.
"Scar says he wants to see you at 11:30 tonight. Have you decided what you're going to do?"
"No,"
said Ted shortly. I've thought about going to the police. Don't do it, lover, warned Ian. Even if scars didn't kill you, the police wouldn't do any good. The only proof you have is the pictures, and you don't have them. And you never will. They'll be burned along with the negatives right in front of you once you sign the paper. I know this guy, Ted. Don't forget, he's had me on the hook for a long time. He's bled me dry. You're my only hope now. I'm desperate. If you let me down, I'll be killed. But don't forget, so will you. Ian, there must be another way out. There has to be. Why don't we both fight him? You don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing we can do, and don't try anything. Those hoods would get a kick out of carving up that handsome mug of yours. Play ball, and we'll both be off the hook. Ian's whining voice filled Ted with a loathing. He found himself wondering what he had ever seen in the youth. In a period of mere seconds, his infatuation of several days was turning into contempt. I'll see you at 11:30, he said coldly and hung up. He stared blankly at the phone. Eileen stood at the other end of the hallway looking at him. I must have been out of my mind, muttered Ted. That bastard! Eileen came toward him. She put her arm around his waist and looked up at him.
I'm so glad you said that, she whispered. Now I know that you belong to me. Now I know that what we did last night was right.
Ted looked at her without understanding her words. He was annoyed by her touch and moved away. He has me trapped and he knows it. There's nothing I can do. Once again, she came toward him.
It would make them look very silly if you were married.
Her words came to him as a threat, a menace, and he couldn't understand why every instinct within him rejected the idea so forcefully. I'd be the one who would look silly. How could I get married when I'll be flat broke? I'm not ready to get married, no matter what you or your mother think. She moved away from him. Her voice was high-pitched and brittle.
I'm not forcing you. It was just an idea.
Ted got to his feet and walked up the stairs. It's not a good idea. I'd be a lousy husband. He spent the next 4 hours in his room, waiting for 11 o'clock to come. 11 o'clock, the hour when he would have to leave for town. That would be the longest walk in his life. Jerry parked the Thunderbird a block away from the amusement park. He walked through the foggy night toward the hazy blobs of yellow that ringed the Ferris wheel. The arcade was deserted. He walked down the long hallway, his footsteps echoing strangely upon the concrete. On either side, weird jungle creatures, pasteboard monsters, and one-dimensional women leered at him. As he passed the refreshment stand, he noticed that the Italian was asleep in a chair tilted back against the cooler. There certainly wouldn't be much business on such a miserable night. He passed the row of slot machines, and then he was staring once more out into the white-clad night. The park was muffled and still. The silence was eerie. For a moment, he couldn't figure out what was missing, and then he realized that the House of Horrors was closed and the scratchy PA system was not operating. Ahead of him was the shack containing all of the electrical equipment for the park. He felt his muscles tense involuntarily as he looked at the shack. There was no way to tell if anyone was inside. He considered for a moment the idea of simply going up and knocking at the door, but he quickly discarded it. If the shack was the place where the pictures were developed, he would never get inside by announcing his arrival. The important thing was to find out if anyone was inside, and if they were, make them open the door so he could force his way in. He moved like a cat through the heavy night until he came to the far wall of the rough wooden hut. He pressed his ear to the wet wood, straining to catch any sound that would betray the presence of someone inside. He was rewarded by a muffled cough on the other side of the wall. Immediately, he wondered how many people were in the structure. Somehow, he had to get them outside. He looked around, searching for inspiration. Immediately, his eyes lighted upon the ring of light bulbs glowing on the Ferris wheel. He reached down and found a pebble in the sand. Aiming carefully, he flung it at the top of window of lights. It disappeared into the ethereal white blanket. Seconds later, a faint tinkle of glass was followed by the disappearance of several lights. Jerry estimated the number which had gone out. Apparently, the lights were wired in groups of six. When one went out, all six were cut off. He reached down, groping to find another one. Once more, he sent the missile through the air, and once more the tinkling sound of glass met his ear. He listened for some reaction within the hut. There was nothing. The third time, he picked up a good-sized rock and sent it on its way. This time, glass showered down upon the concrete below. 12 lights disappeared as the rock clanged metallically against the steel framework of the Ferris wheel. Jerry tensed. He heard footsteps inside the hut. Quickly, he moved to the door and flattened himself against the side of the shack. Almost in the same instant, the door flew open. A tough-looking man of about 30 peered out of the night.
"Who's there?" he called.
Jerry noted the querulous tone in his voice. He flattened himself against the wood wall mere feet away from the other man. He let another rock fly toward the Ferris wheel. It missed the lights, but it did clang loudly against the steel supports. Immediately, the man who Jerry assumed to be Travis leapt out into the night and ran toward the uneven row of lights still remaining. Jerry chuckled to himself and slipped inside the shack. He walked into the pitch blackness. He could barely make out the faint shiver of steel handles on the electrical breaker boxes. A thin line of yellow light showed through the bottom of the door ahead of him. By feeling along the outside wall, he made his way inch by inch toward the light. His heart pounded wildly. His hands were moist with tension. It would be merely seconds before the other man returned. In that time, he had to gain access to the inner room. He was sure now that he had found Scars's dark room. The yellow light could mean nothing else. He only prayed that the incriminating pictures were inside. After what seemed to be ages of painful groping along the unfinished board, his hand contacted the metal door handle. Taking a deep breath, he flung it open. The room was about 6 feet square. It was swathed in light from an open 40-watt bulb. On a counter, he saw trays filled with liquid. Clip hooks on the wall held rows of drying photographs. He made his way across the room in two quick steps. So far, the pictures hadn't been blown up from their original 35-millimeter size. In the feeble light, he had to strain to see them. His heart lurched. He made out Ted's face in the first one he saw. Ted and Ian. His eyes roved over the rest of the tiny squares. He felt suddenly sick. Suddenly, he was aware of feet running toward the door. He moved to one side in the room. The footsteps walked hollowly along the board floor. Jerry tensed, every nerve end quivering with expectancy. Inside, a hard coal of fury burned fiercely. At precisely the right moment, he lunged forward. He caught the photographer around the neck. Relentlessly, he dragged him forward. For an instant, the other was stunned and went limp beneath Jerry's attack, but he revived almost at once. With a tremendous heave, he sent Jerry crashing into the opposite wall. He drove forward, aiming directly for Jerry's middle, but at that instant, Jerry swung his narrow hips to one side. The man crashed into the wooden table legs. The enlarger quivered on its stand, and then toppled downward with a shatter of glass. Jerry was upon the man in an instant. He grabbed for the shirt collar, heard it rip away in his grasp as he dragged the man to his feet and sent his first smashing fist into the hard jaw. A gagging burble erupted from deep within the other man's throat as the blow glanced off the bone with a dull crack. The shirt was still in Jerry's hand. He suddenly felt dead weight on the end of it. The eyes of the other turned glassy in the eerie half-light. The body suddenly pitched forward. Jerry shoved the man into a sprawling, sitting position. He reached into his pocket and pulled out his lighter. He set fire to the bottom edge of just the developed film. In the smoky glare, he searched frantically for the negatives. His eyes lighted on a cardboard box beneath the table. A box filled with manila envelopes. He ripped open the first one and held it up. As the last glimmer of the flaming prints faded into ash, he recognized the first picture he had looked at. Once again, his lighter clicked open. Instead of destroying just the negatives, he set fire to the frayed edge of the carton. Immediately, the dried cardboard blazed. He waited until the carton was almost destroyed. The flames licked against the table leg in a thin blue line. Gradually, the wood ignited and the flames turned a bright yellow. The acrid odor of the minor conflagration caused Jerry to choke and gasp for breath. He stared, fascinated, his burning hatred for these people mirrored by the greedy flames. Finally, the flames moved insidiously upward to the planks of the tabletop. Suddenly, he heard sirens in the background. In his trance born of shock, disgust, and hatred, he had forgotten about the extinguished lights on the top of the Ferris wheel. They would have been visible all over the town as they went out. He looked down impassively at the heavily breathing man on the floor, deciding whether or not he should leave him in the smoke-filled room. His mind reverted automatically to the horrors shown in the photographs. He kicked the slumped figure. Then he walked from the room out into the fog. Behind him, he heard the flames crackling viciously.